When we last left off with Christian and with Faithful, they were suffering deadly persecution in the Vanity Fair. And Faithful had been condemned to death. And we'll pick up there. They therefore brought him out to do with him according to their law. And first they scourged him. Then they buffeted him. Then they lanced his flesh with knives. After that they stoned him with stones. Then pricked him with their swords. And last of all, they burned him to ashes at the stake. Thus came Faithful to his end. Now I saw that there stood behind the multitude a chariot and a couple of horses waiting for Faithful, who, so soon as his adversaries had dispatched him, was taken up into it, and straightway was carried through the clouds with sound of trumpet, the nearest way to the celestial gate. But as for Christian, he had some respite, and was remanded back to prison. So there he remained for a space. But he who overrules all things, having the power of their rage in his own hand, so wrought it about that Christian for the time escaped them and went his way. And as he went, he sang, saying, Well, Faithful, you have faithfully professed unto thy Lord, with whom you shall be blessed when faithless ones with all their vain delights are crying out under their hellish plights, Sing, Faithful, sing, and let thy name survive, for though they killed thee, yet thou art alive. Now I saw in my dream that Christian went not forth alone, for there was one whose name was Hopeful, being so made by the beholding of Christian and Faithful in their words and behavior, in their suffering at the fair, who joined himself unto him, and entering into a brotherly covenant, told him that he would be his companion. Thus one died to bear testimony to the truth, and another rises out of his ashes to be a companion with Christian in his pilgrimage. This Hopeful also told Christian that there were many more of the men in the fair that would take their time and follow after. So I saw that quickly after they were got out of the fair, they overtook one that was going before them, whose name was By-Ends. So they said to him, What countryman, sir? And how far do you go this way? He told them that he came from the town of Fair Speech, and he was going to the celestial city, but told them not his name. From Fair Speech, said Christian. Is there any good that lives there? Oh, yes, said By-Ends, I hope. Well, pray, sir, what may I call you? Said Christian. Well, I'm a stranger to you, and you to me. If you be going this way, I shall be glad of your company. If not, I must be content. Well, this town of Fair Speech, said Christian, I've heard of, and as I remember, they say it's a wealthy place. Oh, yes, said By-Ends, I will assure you that it is. I have very many rich kindred there. Pray, who are your kindred there, said Christian, if a man may be so bold? Almost the whole town, and in particular, my Lord Turnabout, my Lord Time Server, my Lord Fair Speech, from whose ancestors that town first took its name. Also Mr. Smooth Man, Mr. Facing Both Ways, and Mr. Anything. And the parson of our parish, Mr. Two Tongues, was my mother's own brother, my father's side. And to tell you the truth, I am become a gentleman of good quality. Yet my great-grandfather was but a waterman, looking one way and rowing another, and I got most of my estate by the same occupation. Are you a married man? Said Christian. Oh, yes, My wife is a very virtuous woman, the daughter of a virtuous woman. She was my Lady Fanning's daughter. Therefore, she came of a very honorable family and arrived to such a pitch of breeding that she knows how to carry it to all, even to prince and peasant. And 'tis true, we somewhat differ in religion from those of the stricter sort, yet but in two small points. First, we never strive against wind and tide. Secondly, we are always most zealous when religion goes into its silver slippers. We love much to walk with him in the street, if the sun shines and the people applaud him. Then Christian stepped a little aside to his fellow Hopeful, saying, It runs in my mind that this is one By-Ends of Fair Speech, and if it be he, we have a very knave in our company, as dwelleth in all these parts. Then said Hopeful, Ask him. Methinks he should not be ashamed of his name. So Christian came up with him again and said, Sir, you talk as if you knew something more than all the world does, and if I take not my mark amiss, I deem I have half a guess of you. Is not your name Mr. Byens of Fair Speech? Byens said, That is not my name, but indeed it is a nickname that is given me by some that cannot abide me, and I must be content to bear it as a reproach, as other good men have borne theirs before me. But did you never give an occasion to men to call you by this name? Said Christian. Never, never, said Byens. The worst ever I did to give them an occasion was to give me this name was that I always had the luck to jump in my judgment with the present way of the times, whatever it was, and my chance was to get thereby. But if things are thus cast upon me, let me count them a blessing, but let not the malicious load me therefore with reproach. Well, I thought indeed, said Christian, that you were the man that I heard of, and to tell you what I think, I fear this name belongs to you more properly than you are willing we should think it does. Well, if you thus imagine, said Byens, I cannot help it. You shall find me a fair company keeper if you will still admit me your associate. If you will go with us, said Christian, you must go against wind and tide, the which I perceive is against your opinion. You must also own religion in his rags, as well as in his silver slippers, and stand by him, too, when bound in irons, as well as when he walks in the street with applause. But you must not impose, said Byens, or lord it over my faith. Leave me to my liberty, and let me go with you. Not a step further, unless you will do in what I propound as we. Then said Byens, I shall never desert my old principles, since they are harmless and profitable. If I may not go with you, I must do as I did before you overtook me, even go by myself, until some overtake me that will be glad of my company. Now I saw in my dream that Christian and Hopeful forsook him and kept their distance before him, but one of them, looking back, saw three men following Mr. Byens, and behold, as they came up with him, he made them a very low congee, and they also gave him a compliment. The men's names were Mr. Hold the World, Mr. Moneylove, and Mr. Saveall, men that Mr. Byens had formerly been acquainted with, for in their minority they were schoolfellows and were taught by one Mr. Gripeman, a schoolmaster in Lovegain, which is a market town in the country of Coveting in the north. This schoolmaster taught them the art of getting, either by violence, cozenage, flattering, lying, or by putting on a guise of religion. And these four gentlemen had attained much of the art of their master, so that they could each of them have kept such a school themselves. Well, when they had, as I said, thus saluted each other, Mr. Moneylove said to Mr. Byens, Who are they upon the road before us? For Christian and Hopeful were yet within view. Byens said, They are a couple of far countrymen that, after their mode, are going on pilgrimage. Money said, Alas, why did they not stay, that we might have had their good company? For they and we and you, sir, I hope, are all going on a pilgrimage. We are so indeed, said Byens, but the men before us are so rigid, and love so much their own notions, and do also so lightly esteem the opinions of others, that let a man be ever so godly, yet if he jumps not with them in all things, they thrust him quite out of their company. That is bad, said Mr. Saveall. But we have read of some that are righteous overmuch, and such men's rigidness prevails with them to judge and condemn all but themselves. But I pray, what and how many were the things wherein you deferred? Why, they, said Mr. Byens, after their headstrong manner, conclude that it is their duty to rush on their journey all weathers, and I am for waiting for wind and tide. They are for hazarding all for God at a clap, and I am for taking all advantages to secure my life and estate. Therefore holding their notions, though all other men be against them. But I am for religion and what, and so far as the times and my safety will bear it. And they are for religion when in rags and content, but I am for him when he walks in the golden slippers and the sunshine and with applause. Mr. Holderworld said, Aye, and hold you there still, Mr. Goodbyeens. For by my part, I can count him but a fool that, having the liberty to keep what he has, shall be so unwise to lose it. Let us be wise as serpents. 'Tis better to make hay when the sun shines. You see how the bee lies still all winter and bestirs her only when she can have profit with pleasure. God sends sometimes rain and sometimes sunshine, If they be such fools to go through the first, let us be content to take fair weather along with us. For my part, I like that religion best that will stand with the security of God's good blessing unto us. For who can imagine that it is ruled by his reason, since God has bestowed upon us the good things of this life, but that he should keep them for his sake? Abraham and Solomon grew rich in religion, and Job says that a good man shall lay up gold as dust. But we must not be such as men before us, if they be as you have described them. Saval said, I think that we are all agreed in this manner, and therefore there needs no more words about it. Mr. Money said, No, there needs no more words about this matter. Indeed, for he that believes neither scripture nor reason, and you see we have both on our side, neither knows his own liberty nor seeks his own safety. Mr. Bayan said, My brethren, we are, as you see, going all on pilgrimage, and for our better diversion from things that are bad, give me leave to propound to you this question. Suppose a man, a minister or a tradesman, should have an advantage lie before us to get the good blessings of this life, yet so that he can by no means come by them except in appearance at least he becomes extraordinarily zealous in some points of religion that he meddled not with before. May he not use this means to attain his end and yet be a right honest man? Money said, I see the bottom of your question. With these gentlemen's good leave, I will endeavor to shape you an answer. And first to speak to your question as it concerns a minister himself. Suppose a minister, a worthy man, possessed of but a very small benefice, has in his eye a greater, more fat and plump by far. He has also now an opportunity of getting at it, yet so as by being more studious, by preaching more frequently and jealously, and because the temper of the people requires it, by altering some of his principles, for my part, I see no reason but a man may do this, provided he has a call, aye, and more a great deal besides, and yet be an honest man. For why his desire of a greater benefice is lawful, this cannot be contradicted, since 'tis set before him by providence, though so then he may get it if he can, making no question for conscience sake. Besides, his desire after that benefice makes him more studious, a more zealous preacher, etc., and so makes him a better man, yes, makes him better improve his parts, which is according to the mind of God. Now, as for his complying with the temper of his people, by descending to serve them some of his principles, this argues that he is of self-denying temper, of sweet and winning deportment, and so more fit for the ministerial function. I conclude then that a minister that changes a small for a great should not, for so doing, be judged as covetous, but rather, since he is improved in his parts and industry thereby, be counted as one that pursues his call and the opportunity put into his hands to do good. And now to the second part of the question, which concerns the tradesman you mentioned. Suppose such a one to have but a poor employ in the world, but by becoming religious he may mend his market, perhaps get a rich wife, or more and far better customers to his shop. For my part, I see no reason that this may be lawfully done. For why? To become religious is a virtue, but by what means soever a man becomes so. Nor is it unlawful to get a rich wife, or more custom to my shop. Besides, the man that gets these by becoming religious gets that which is good of them that are good by becoming good himself. So then here is a good wife and a good customer and a good gain and all of these by becoming religious, which is good. Therefore, to become religious, to get all these is a good and profitable design. This answer made by this Mr. Moneylove to Mr. Bayan's question was highly applauded by them all. Wherefore they concluded upon the whole that it was most wholesome and advantageous, and because, as they thought, no man was able to contradict it, because Christian and Hopeful was yet within call, they jointly agreed to assault them with the question as soon as they overtook them, and the rather because they had opposed Mr. Bayan's before. So they called after them, and they stopped and stood still till they came up to them, but they concluded as they went, that not Mr. Bayan's, but old Mr. Holdeworld should propound the question to them, because, as they supposed, their answer to him would be without the remainder of that heat that they had kindled between Mr. Byans and them at their parting a little before. So they came up to each other, and after a short salutation, Mr. Holdeworld propounded the question to Christian and his fellow, and then bid them to answer if they could. Then said Christian, "Even a babe in religion may answer 10,000 such questions. For if it be unlawful to follow Christ for loaves, as it is, how much more abominable is it to make of him and religion a stalking horse to get and enjoy the world? Nor do we find any other heathens, hypocrites, devils, and witches that are of this opinion. Heathens, for when Hamor and Shechem had a mind to the daughter and cattle of Jacob, and saw that there was no ways for them to come at them but by being circumcised, they said to their companions, 'If every male of us be circumcised as they are circumcised, shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours?' Their daughters and their cattle were that which they sought to obtain, and the religion, the stalking horse, they made use of to come at them." Read the whole story. The hypocritical Pharisees were also of this religion. Long prayers were their pretense, but to get widows' houses was their intent, and the greater damnation was from God their judgment. Judas the devil was also of this religion. He was religious for the bag, that he might be possessed of what was therein, but he was lost, cast away, and the very son of perdition. Simon the witch was of this religion too. He would have had the Holy Ghost, then he might have gotten money therewith. And his sentence from Peter's mouth was according. Neither will it out of my mind, but that the man that takes up religion for the world will throw away religion for the world. For so surely as Judas designed the world in becoming religious, so surely did he also sell religion and his master for the same. To answer the question, therefore, affirmatively, as I perceive you have done, and to accept of, as authentic, such answer is both heathenish, hypocritical, and devilish, and your reward will be according to your works. Staring upon one another, had not wherewith to answer Christian. Hopeful also approved of the soundness of Christian's answer. So there was a great silence among them. Mr. Byans and his company also staggered and kept behind, that Christian and Hopeful might outgo them. Then said Christian to his fellow, "If these men cannot stand before the sentence of men, what will they do with the sentence of God? And if they are mute when dealt with by vessels of clay, what will they do when they shall be rebuked by the flames of a devouring fire?" Then Christian and Hopeful outwent them again, and went till they came to a delicate plain called Ease, where they went with much content. But that plain was but narrow, so they were quickly got over it. Now at the farther side of that plain was a little hill called Lucre, and in that hill a silver mine, which some of them that had formerly gone that way, because of the rarity of it, had turned aside to see. But going too near the brim of the pit, the ground being deceitful unto them, broke, and they were slain. Some also had been maimed there, and could not, to their dying day, be their own men again. Then I saw in my dream that a little off the road, over against the silver mine, stood Demas, gentlemanlike, to call passengers to come and see, who said to Christian and his fellow, "Ho, turn aside hither, and I will show you a thing." "What thing so deserving as to turn us out of the way to see it?" said Christian. Demas said, "Here's a silver mine and some digging in it for treasure. If you will come with a little pains, you may richly provide for yourself." Hopeful said, "Well, let's go and see." "Not I," said Christian. "I have heard of this place before now, and how many have there been slain. And besides, that treasure is a snare to those that seek it, for it hinders them from their pilgrimage." Then Christian called to Demas and saying, "Is not the place dangerous? Has it not hindered many in their pilgrimage?" "Oh, not very dangerous," said Demas, "except to those that are careless." But withal he blushed as he spoke. Then said Christian to Hopeful, "Let us not stir a step, but keep on our way." Hopeful says, "I will warrant you when buy-in comes up. If he has the same invitation as we, he will turn in there to see." "No doubt thereof," said Christian, "for his principles lead him that way, and 100 to 1 he dies there." Then Demas called again, saying, But will you not come over and see? Then Christian roundly answered, saying, Demas, you are an enemy to the right ways of God of this way, and has been already condemned for your own turning aside by one of his majesty's judges. And why seekest thou to bring us into the like condemnation? Besides, if we all turn aside, our Lord the King will certainly hear thereof, and will there put us to shame, where we would stand with boldness before him. Demas cried again that he was also one of their fraternity, and if there would tarry a little, he would also himself talk with them. Then said Christian, What is your name? Is it not the same by which I have called you? Yes, my name is Demas. I am the son of Abraham. I know you, said Christian. Gehazi was your great-grandfather, and Judas your father, and you have trod their steps. It is but a devilish prank that you use. My father was hanged for a traitor, and thou deservest no better reward. Assure yourself that when we come to the king, we will do him word of this thy behavior. Thus they went on their way. By this time, Baens and his companions were come again within sight, and they at first beck went over to Demas. Now, whether they fell into the pit by looking over the brink thereof, or whether they went down to dig, or whether they were smothered in the bottom by the damps that commonly arise, of these things I am not certain, but this I observed, that they were never seen again in the way. Then sang Christian, Baens and silver Demas does agree, one calls, the other runs, that he may be a sharer in his lucre. So these two take up in this world, and no further go. Now I saw that just on the other side of this plain, the pilgrims came to a place where stood an old monument, hard by the highway side, at the sight of which they were both concerned because of the strangeness of the form thereof, for it seemed to them as if it had been a woman transformed into the shape of a pillar. Here, therefore, they stood looking and looking upon it, but could not for a time tell what they should make thereof. At last, Hopeful espied, written upon the head thereof, a writing in an unusual hand, but he, being no scholar, called a Christian, for he was learned, to see if he could pick out the meaning. So he came, and after a little laying of letters together, he found the same to be this, Remember Lot's wife. So he read it to his fellow, after which they both concluded that that was the pillar of salt into which Lot's wife was turned, for her looking back with a covetous heart when she was going from Sodom for safety. Which sudden and amazing sight gave them occasion for this discourse. Ah, my brother, said Christian, this is a seasonal sight. It came opportunely to us, after the invitation which Demas gave us to come over to view the hill Lucre. And had we gone over as he desired us, and as you was inclined to do, my brother, we had, for aught I know, have been made like this woman a spectacle for those that shall come after to behold. Hopeful said, I am sorry I was so foolish, and I am made to wonder that I am now not as Lot's wife, for wherein was the difference between her sin and mine? She only looked back. I had a desire to go see. Let grace be adored, and let me be ashamed that ever such a thing should be in my heart. Christian said, Let us take notice of what we see here for our help for time to come. This woman escaped one judgment, for she fell not by the destruction of Sodom, yet she was destroyed by another, as we shall see. She is turned into a pillar of salt. Hopeful said, True. And she may also be to us both caution and example, caution that we should shun her sin, or a sign of what judgment will overtake us, as shall not be prevented by this caution. So Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, with 250 men that perished in their sins, did also become a sign or example to beware. But above all, I muse one thing. To wit, how Demas and his fellows can stand so confidently yonder to look for that treasure, which this woman, but for looking behind after her, we read not that she stepped one foot out of the way, was turned into a pillar of salt, especially since the judgment which overtook her did make her an example within the sight of where they are, for they cannot choose but to see her, did they but lift up their eyes. It is a thing to be wondered at, said Christian, and it argues that their hearts are grown desperate in the case, and I cannot tell who to compare them so fitly with as that pickpockets in the presence of the judge, or that will cut purses under the gallows. It is said of the men of Sodom that they were sinners exceedingly, because they were sinners before the Lord, that is in his eyesight, notwithstanding the kindnesses that he had showed them, for the land of Sodom was now like the Garden of Eden heretofore. Thus therefore they provoked him the more to jealousy, and made their plague as hot as the fire of the Lord out of heaven could make it. And it is most rationally to be concluded that such, even such as these are, that shall sin in the sight, yea, and that too in spite of such examples that are set continually before them to caution them to the contrary, must be partakers of severest judgment. Doubtless, said Hopeful, thou hast said the truth. But what a mercy it is that neither thou, but especially I, am not made myself this example. This ministereth occasion to us to thank God, to fear before him, and to always remember Lot's wife. I saw then that they went on their way to a pleasant river, which David the king called the river of God, but which John the river of the waters of life. Now their way lay just upon the bank of the river. Here, therefore, Christian and his companions walked with great delight. They drank also of the water of the river, which was pleasant and enlivening to their weary spirits. Besides, on the banks of this river, on either side, were green trees that bore all manner of fruit, and the leaves they ate to prevent surfeits and other diseases that are incident to those who heat their blood by travels. On either side of the river also was a meadow, curiously beautified with lilies, and it was green all the year long. In this meadow they lay down and slept, for here they might lie down safely. When they awoke, they gathered again the fruit of the trees, and drank again of the water of the rivers, and then lay down again to sleep. Thus they did several days and nights. Then they sang, "Behold ye how these crystal streams do glide, to comfort pilgrims by the highway side. The meadows green, beside their fragrant smell, yield dainties for them, and he that can tell what pleasant fruit, yea, leaves these trees do yield, will soon sell all, that he may buy this field." So when they were disposed to go on, for they were not yet at their journey's end, they eat and drank and departed. Now I beheld in my dream that they had not journeyed far, but the river and the way for a time parted, at which they were not a little sorry, yet they durst not go out of the way. Now the way from the river was rough, and their feet tender by reason of their travels. So the souls of the pilgrims were much discouraged because of the way. Wherefore, still as they went on, they wished for a better way. Now a little before them, there was on the left hand of the road a meadow, and a stile to go over into it, and that meadow is called Bypath Meadow. Then said Christian to his fellow, "If this meadow lies along our wayside, let's go over into it." Then he went over the stile to see, and behold, a path lay along by the way on the other side of the fence. "'Tis according to my wish," said Christian. "Here is the easiest going. Come, good Hopeful, let's go over." Hopeful said, "But how, if this path should lead us out of the way?" "That's not like," said Christian. "Look, does it not go along by the wayside?" So Hopeful, being persuaded by his fellow, went after him over the stile. And when they are gone over, they got into the path, they found it very easy for their feet, and withal they, looking before them, espied a man walking as they did, and his name was Vain Confidence. So they called after him and asked him whither that way led. He said, "To the Celestial Gate." "Look," said Christian, "did I not tell you so? By this you can see we are right." So they followed, and he went before them. But behold, the night came on, and it grew very dark, so that they, being behind, lost the sight of him that went before. He, therefore, that went before, Vain Confidence by name, not seeing the way before him, fell into a deep pit, which was on purpose there made by the prince of those grounds to catch vainglorious fools withal, and was dashed in pieces with his fall. Now Christian and his fellow heard him fall, so they called to know the matter. But there was none to answer, only they heard a groaning. Then said Hopeful, "Where are we now?" Then this fellow, silent, as mistrusting that he had led him out of the way, and now it began to rain, and to thunder, and to lightning in a very dreadful manner, and the water rose amain. Then Hopeful groaned in himself, saying, "Oh, that I had kept on my way!" Christian said, "Who would have thought that this path should have led us out of the way?" Hopeful said, I was afraid on it the very first, and therefore gave you that gentle caution. I would have spoke plainer, but that you are older than I. Oh, good brother, be not offended, said Christian. I am sorry I brought you out of the way, and that I have put thee in so much imminent danger. Pray, my brother, forgive me. I did not do it of an evil intent. Be comforted, my brother, said Hopeful. Do I, for I forgive thee, and I believe too that this shall be for our good. I am glad I have with me a merciful brother, said Christian, but we must not stand here. Let's try to go back again. Hopeful said, but good brother, let me go before. No, if you please, said Christian, let me go first, that if there be any danger, I may be first therein, because by my means we have both gone out of the way. No, said Hopeful, you shall not go first, for your mind being troubled may lead you out of the way again. Then for their encouragement they heard the voice of one saying, Let thine heart be towards the highway, even the way that you went. Turn again. By this time the waters were greatly risen, by reason of which of going back was very dangerous. Then I thought that it was easier going out of the way when we were in than going in when we were out. Yet they had ventured to go back. But it was so dark and the flood was so high that in their going back they had like to have been drowned 9 or 10 times. Neither could they, with all the skill they had, get again to the stile that night. Wherefore at last, lighting under a little shelter, they sat down there till the day broke, but being weary, they fell asleep.